So we are very happy to welcome all of you for the part 2 of this lecture series, which is entitled Rags to Riches, a journey from poverty to prosperity. We began discussing this lecture series this morning. We are talking from or discussing from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 80, which is entitled Lord Krishna Meets His Friend Sudama. This is an incredible story, a beautiful story that can give us amazing lessons for our spiritual lives, not just our spiritual lives and our spiritual progress, but it can give us incredible lessons for applying in our day-to-day personal lives. It can give us a glimpse into the most amazing, wonderful, touching mercy of the Supreme Lord. And when our hearts are touched by that mercy, when our hearts are touched by that affection, when our hearts are touched by that devotion, there's really nothing more to be achieved in life. This morning I was discussing how this whole story, I chose to divide the story into 9 sections. And I call this 9 sections as, number 1, qualification of Sudama. What were his qualifications? Number 2, conditions of Sudama and his wife as they were living in their household life. Number 3, conversation between Sudama and his wife. Number 4, contemplation of Sudama, of how he would go to Lord Krishna in Dwarka and see Krishna there. Number 5, preparation of Sudama to go to Dwarka to visit his friend Lord Krishna. 6, commutation to Dwarka, how Sudama travels to Dwarka. 7, reception of Sudama, how Lord Krishna receives Sudama in Dwarka. Number 8, recollection of Sudama, how Sudama and Krishna sit together and recollect all what they had gone through as they were little kids in the ashram of their teacher. And number 9, reciprocation of the Lord with Sudama. So 9 things really: qualifications, condition, conversation, contemplation, preparation, commutation, reception, recollection, and reciprocation. See if you can remember something out of that. But whether you can remember something or not, I'm sure just discussing a couple of things from the story would probably touch our hearts, because the story is an amazing one. This morning, we were talking about the qualifications of Sudama. We discussed that in one lecture. And I'm not going to get into the details. Just talking about how Sudama was a great Brahmana, completely controlled, completely satisfied and all that stuff. This evening, we'll see if we can go ahead a little bit. And we're talking, beginning to talk this evening, by discussing the condition that Sudama and his wife were living in. The Bhagavatam describes that Sudama and his wife were living in abject poverty. Being a grihastha, being a householder, it's natural that one has a family, one has kids, one has socio-economic responsibilities, and therefore it's but natural that a man in family must work, must have a profession, must do something in order that he can earn his livelihood and maintain his family and his offspring. For a monk who lives as a brahmachari or as a sannyasi, if he doesn't have a profession or a job, no problem. Monks give up their professions to become monks. You know, a lot of monks are engineers and lawyers and professionals, and they gave up their professions to become monks so that they can serve humanity. But people who live in family cannot afford to do that. For them, their work, their profession is crucial because they need to earn money and maintain their families. Sudama, however, was a self-satisfied Brahmana. He felt, why work? Whatever comes by the grace of the Lord Almighty is sufficient to take care of our families. He was happy to simply depend on Lord Krishna, simply depend on the Lord. Whatever comes his way, well, I shall maintain my family based on whatever comes my way. Imagine if you were to live in London based on that. But did you know, by the way, that the three most expensive cities of the world? One, Tokyo. Two, Moscow. No cows there. Moscow. Three, London. Imagine living in a city like London. The men and the women think, why work? Depend on Gokulananda. Krishna will provide whatever he wants to provide us, and we can maintain our families based on what the Lord provides. That's Sudama. Why work? Why go here and there? I'm a Brahmana. Let me worship the Lord. I shall be satisfied serving the Lord, and the Lord will take care of me and my family. So it's obvious they were in abject poverty. Obvious, which means Lord doesn't give, looks like. They were in poverty. Sudama's wife was also the same. None of them were dressed in, Armani's or Marc Spencer's. They were not dressed up in designer garments. They hardly had anything. They were dressed up in ragged clothes, torn clothes. Sudama's wife was emaciated out of hunger. She had hardly anything to eat, and he had hardly anything to eat. Both were emaciated, thin, lean. Anyone who would look at Sudama or his wife would have feelings of sympathy arise in their hearts for them. Sudama's wife, however, she was thinking, what should I do? In a state of being absolutely emaciated, with a distressful face, she approached her husband Sudama and said, my dear husband, I think it's but natural that we need something in our lives, and it wouldn't be a bad idea to go to your dear friend, Lord Krishna, who lives in Dwarka. Do you know where Sudama lived? Anyone knows where Sudama lived? Oh, the Masis are telling us. The Masis definitely know that Sudama was born and raised in Porbandar. And Porbandar is about 2 hours drive, 3 hours drive from Dwarka, several hours walk from Dwarka. Sudama's wife said, we don't want to remain Bandars, do we? We're born Porbandar. You must go to Dwarka and approach your dear friend Lord Krishna for help. So this is the condition of Sudama and his wife. Are you all now getting me? Sudama and his wife are in abject poverty. Both are emaciated. Her face is distressed. They're wearing not designer garments. They're wearing torn, ragged clothes. And Sudama's wife approaches Krishna. Sudama, go to Krishna for help. From this particular situation of their condition, we can learn two very powerful lessons. And if you are all with me, I'll tell you what that lesson is. Are you all with me? Great. The first lesson we can learn is, we should never be judgmental. Very often in our life, we are very hasty and we become judgmental, and we start judging people by their words. We start judging people by what they say. We start judging people by how they behave. We start judging people by what they look like. We should not be very hasty and try to come to conclusions about people simply based on what they say and how they behave. And therefore, if someone really carefully observes Sudama's story, they might start thinking, based on Sudama's wife's words, that such a selfish lady, isn't it? She wants nice gratification for us. Probably she wants nice saris. Probably she wants nice jewelry. Probably she wants nice pizzas, nice food to eat. Probably she wants a nice mansion. Probably she wants a nice car. And because she wants nice stuff, so she's requesting Sudama, go and get something from your Lord, from your friend Krishna. It's not uncommon. Sometimes even in households, when someone's being pushed, you work hard. What's happening? We have a small house. We want a bigger house. We only have a run-down Fiat. We want a Bentley. What's happening? We're just eating in some simple clay plates. We must eat in silver plates. Work hard. Go to the temple. Chant Hare Krishna. Krishna will give you something. It's easy to come to conclusions and judgment based on someone's words. Please try to understand why Sudama's wife was requesting Sudama to go. Sudama's wife thought to herself, if I tell him to go and ask something for himself, he'll never go. He's such a devotee that he will never go and ask Krishna something for himself. So if I tell him that, look at how emaciated you are, my dear husband, I cannot stand the sight of seeing you emaciated. I can't stand the sight of seeing you so distressed. Please go and ask something from Krishna so that you will be, in a nice situation in life. She knew that Sudama would never go. So she came to Sudama and told Sudama, we need it. I need that money. I need that food. I need those clothes. Our kids need all of these things. And Sudama's wife was such a selfless lady. She didn't need anything. All she wanted was her husband be satisfied. But her husband wouldn't ask. So she came and said, you go and ask Krishna for something for us. Now by her words, what would we come to a conclusion? A conclusion would be, look at that selfish lady. Asking Sudama to go and, ask for some money from Krishna so that she can have nice Kanjivaram saris. Kanjivaram saris or Jari saris. She can have nice Tribhuvan Das Zaveri jewelries from Mumbai. She can have nice, good time and all opulence. But see what she's wanting. She doesn't want anything for herself. She's only asking it so that he can go, he can get things. And then she can see that Sudama is happy. And therefore, to conclude and judge someone simply by what they say is wrong. We have to examine what their motives are. Can I tell you a short story? There was a little boy called Arnav. Arnav was in school. Arnav's maths teacher came to the class and was to teach him mathematics. Little boy. Teacher brought apples. Said, Arnav, if I have this one apple, and one apple, and one apple, and I give you this one apple, and one apple, and one apple, how many apples will you have? Arnav said, four. Teacher said, no, Arnav, you're not getting the point. Hear me again. If I give you this one apple, and this one apple, and this one apple, how many apples will you have? Four, said Arnav. The teacher said, you didn't get the point. She remembered Arnav's mother telling her that Arnav liked strawberries a lot. And she had some strawberries. So she took three strawberries and said, Arnav, if I give you one strawberry, this one strawberry, and this one strawberry, how many strawberries you have? Three, said Arnav. Wonderful, said the teacher. You got the lesson right. And then she took the apples again. And said, Arnav, if I give you this one apple, and this one apple, and this one apple, how many apples do you have? Four, said Arnav. The teacher was frustrated. What is this kid? Can't learn this simple lesson. When I say strawberries, why? When I say apples, he gives the wrong answer. Why? Said, why, Arnav? How would you have four apples? Arnav put his hand in a bag and pulled out one. Said, I already have one, teacher. You see. If you give me one apple and one apple and one apple and I already have one, so it's four apples, isn't it? But if you give me one strawberry and one strawberry and one strawberry, I only have three. It's not that he was a nut and he didn't know maths lessons. He was just speaking the truth. Now, if the teacher wouldn't know that he had a bag, apple in the bag, would the teacher say he was right or wrong? The teacher would say that he was wrong because he said it was four apples where she had only given three. But when the teacher actually found what was inside the bag, the fourth apple, then the teacher realized, oh, he's right. So So to come to a conclusion and judge people and say he is right or she is right or he is wrong or she is wrong simply by what they say is judgmentalism. And we cannot judge people simply by what they say. Because inside their bags, they have something else. They may say something, but within their hearts, they have something else. Their motives are totally different. Like Sudama's wife. What was her motive? In asking her husband to go to Krishna, ask something for us. She didn't want anything. Her motive was the husband gets all the benefits. Selflessly wanting to serve. But if we go by the external situation, we can definitely be very judgmental. Jesus Christ. Till the age of 13, he was in Israel, Jerusalem. He left Israel and only at the age of 30 did he come back to Jerusalem, Israel. For 17 good years he was missing. And a lot of priests have said that he was in India. A lot of Christian priests have evidence for that. They say that he was in Jagannath Puri worshipping Lord Jagannath. From where he got all his powers by which he could bring the dead back to life, heal the sick. There's evidence to that. People have written books. Christian priests have written books on this. Any case, when Jesus came back to Israel, the first time he came to Jerusalem, they have a huge temple of the Jews called Sanhedrin. They had this pigeons, lambs, all meant to be sacrificed on the altar. Jesus came, took his stick and broke down the whole market. He broke down the shops. He released the pigeons. He released the lambs. And one of the members of the temple came to Jesus and said, Rabbi, we were following your mission with great interest. We were thinking that we will patch up. Your words are creating great inspiration to our people here. We thought let's work together. But what you have done today surprises us. Is your intention to break this temple? Guess what Jesus said. He said, break this temple and I shall rebuild it in 3 days. The man of the temple said, Rabbi, from King Solomon's time, it took thousands of years to build this temple and thousands of employees to build this temple. And you dare say that break this temple and this temple shall be built in 3 days? Jesus said, a temple is the house of God, and where God lives, that place can never be broken. You know what Jesus actually meant? Jesus meant that there's all these rituals of killing animals and birds going on the altar. I want to break down this temple, this ritualism. And within 3 days, I can establish the path of true dharma, true religion. He didn't mean literally breaking down the temple. And one of the reasons he was crucified was, one of his allegations was, he claims to break the temple in 3 days. Break the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. What he said was not understood by people. What his motive was not to break the temple. His motive was to break the ritualism in the temple. And from ritual, bring it to spiritual. Make it spiritual. From ritual to spiritual. People couldn't understand Jesus Christ. Isn't it common that we suddenly judge a person by what he or she is saying and not really understand what their motives actually are? How many of you have ever gone through this experience that you came to a conclusion about someone based on what he or she has said without actually understanding their motives? Wonderful. How many of you have experienced in your life that people have judged you for what you have said without actually understanding what your motives were? I think there are more hands up here. Isn't it? Oh, how many times we go through this in our lives, isn't it? Therefore, one of the great saints has said, seek not to be loved. Seek to love. Seek not to be forgiven. Seek to forgive. Seek not to be understood. Seek to understand. We want to be understood by others? Let us first try to understand others. We want to be loved by others? Let us first try to love others. We want to be forgiven by others? Let us first try to forgive others. others. We cannot expect to be forgiven unless we forgive. We cannot expect to be understood unless we understand. And there's no question of understanding. Most of the time there is misunderstanding. You know, in colleges they use in Bombay, misunderstanding. A miss is standing under the stairs. There's a lot of misunderstanding that goes on in our lives. A lot of us have gone through this. And therefore, Sudama's and his wife's condition is giving us a very powerful lesson. Are you all with me? Yes. That was a very soft yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. You know, the lesson we are learning from Sudama's condition is what? We shouldn't be judgmental. We shouldn't come to conclusions. We shouldn't come to conclusions without understanding what the background, what the motive is. Otherwise, things that seemingly seem to be material could be very divine and spiritual, motivated spiritually. And things that seemingly seem to be very spiritual externally may seem very material really internally. In India, they have this saying called Bagula Bhagat. I don't know how many of you have heard of that. Bagula Bhagat means a fake devotee. A bagula is a crane. And the crane will stand on one leg like a yogi and close his eyes. Deep meditation in the waters. Apparently it appears that such a great soul, you know. But what is the bagula, the crane, looking for? Machli kab aayega? Where is the fish? Similarly, a lot of so-called devotees or saintly people outside could be bagula bhagats. How? They could be wearing these nice saintly clothes and closing their eyes in postures of meditation, and with half eyes open they're thinking, oh, the owner of such and such company is coming. Kitna aayega? How much can I get from this man? You know? Bagula bhagat. On the other hand, we may have a simple householder, a grihastha, a family man, who may apparently not look a saint at all. Who may apparently look a pounds, shillings, pence man. But his motives may be way more cleaner, way more purer, way more sincere than a so-called meditator who wears this garb of a saint and sits in meditation thinking, what can I get out of this man? And therefore, one can never come to conclusions based on external words, behaviors and appearances. Is that lesson clear with all of you? Wonderful. The second lesson that we can learn from Sudama's and his wife's condition of poverty is this. Sudama, fully dependent on Krishna. Let whatever Krishna sends come my way and I shall be happy. Today, if Krishna sends a pizza, I'll eat a pizza with black Kalamato olives, artichoke hearts, you know, topped with olive oil, fresh basil leaves, or oregano. Toppings. And as they say here, jalapeno. In India we call it jalapeno. Here they call it jalapeno. Jalapeno. Yeah. And if by Krishna's grace tomorrow there's nothing much left, and if I get some little rice and a khatti meethi Gujarati dal, still I'm okay. And if by Krishna's grace tomorrow nothing comes, still I'm okay. Are we okay? Doesn't look like. Doesn't look like we are okay hearing that. Sudama, totally dependent on Krishna. No problem. Let what come my way come. I'm happy. That's the problem Sudama's wife had. I'm okay hungry myself. Can't see my husband hungry. Want him to go to Krishna, you know. Can't see him hungry. And therefore, a person who is like Sudama, so advanced, so exalted, so pure in his devotion to Krishna, can have this exclusive dependence. And for such devotees, you know what Krishna says in the Gita? Ananya chintayanto mam ye janah paryupasate tesham nitya abhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyam. In India, the slogan yogakshemam vahamyam is for life insurance corporations, LIC policies. Yogakshemam Vahamyam. We carry what you have and preserve what you have and carry what you lack. Krishna is the man who can give us the proper life insurance. You know, he is the insurance man. Ananyaschintayantomam. With one pointed devotion, anyone worships me and thinks of me. Ye janaha pariupasate, tesham nityabhyuktanam yogakshemam bhamyam. I'll carry, preserve what they have, and carry what they lack. There was a devotee of the Lord whose name was Arjunacharya. This man Arjunacharya was such a devotee. He would study the Gita daily. He was also like Sudama. Not worried about what to eat, what not to eat. Aagya, aagya, nahi aaya, chutti. No problem. You know, totally dependent on Krishna. And one day, as he was reading this verse, Ananyaschintayantumam, he said, Krishna preserves what we have, fine. But why should he carry something for his devotee? I'll carry what you lack. Which means he has to lug on his shoulders things that his devotees want. This verse is wrong. So he scratched off that verse in the Gita. Preserve what, fine. But carry what he lack. Can't carry what he lack. You can't make Krishna carry stuff for you. He scratched it off. His wife said, hey, something to eat at home? Nothing today. Okay, I'll go out, beg and come back. He went to beg. Meanwhile, two little boys came there. They brought a lot of stuff on their shoulders. And they knocked at the house of Arjuna Acharya, door of Arjuna Acharya. The wife opened the door. These two sweet, beautiful kids. They were very pretty, very sweet. The wife said, yes, you want something? Said, your husband, Arjuna Acharya, we are his disciples. Said, really? I never knew my husband had disciples. Anyway, this is a revelation to me. He never discloses everything to me. Sometimes they don't, you know. Doesn't disclose everything to me. So, doesn't matter. What brings you here? Said, your husband, he sent this all these ingredients to cook a feast. He said, really? What is it? They put all these big gunny bags, burlap bags down, basmati rice, and expensive dals, vegetables, ghee, dry fruits, N things. Said, my husband had a big catch today. Well, it was big, huh? She thought, great. And as they put it down, such sweet boys. Come, I'll cook something out of this feed you brought all the way for me and my husband. Please take it. Said, no. We have to get back. If we don't get back, our guru, your husband, beat us, you know. Beat you? Such sweet boys. Yeah, he beats us. You want to see? See? And they turned around, removed their chadars, and there were whip marks, lash marks, all over, bruised and bleeding, you know. Who did this? Your husband! My God, let him come today. I'll teach him a good lesson. Beating such innocent, sweet, pretty kids? Can't handle this. Anyway, we are getting late, we'll go. So they left. Arjunacharya came back home. The wife had cooked a mega feast. Kachoris, halwas, samosas, gulab jamuns, rasgullas, paneer tikka masalas, tandoori rotis, rumali rotis, aloo parathas, naans, mooli parathas, methi parathas. Oh, you are all thinking if that's the menu outside today for prasadam. No, it's not. It's too elaborate. You know, this massive feast Sudama's wife had cooked. You know. I mean, not Sudama's wife, Arjunacharya's wife. When he came back, he smelled. He said, where did it all come from? You sent it, isn't it? So I didn't. So two guys came saying that you were your disciples. They came carrying these big bags on their back with all these ingredients to cook this feast. I didn't send anyone. So what did they look like? See, one was bluish in color. He had these beautiful eyes. Like lotus petals reaching straight up to his ears. He had beautiful blackish curly hair, and the locks of his curly hair were dropping down and cascading down his cheeks. He was decorated with beautiful mineral designs on his faces.
He had a yellow dhoti, beautiful ornaments decorating his bosom. And the other guy who came was whitish in complexion. Whitish, like a fresh autumn cloud. Oh, the sky is so beautiful. They charmed my heart. And you know what? They told me that you beat them. How can you be so ruthless? How can you be so hard-hearted? How can you be so cruel? And these pretty little boys who are your disciples and students, you beat them, you lash them, you whip them. They showed me on their back these lash marks. Arjuna Sharya said, I didn't do anything. I don't have any disciples or students. But now I know who these two guys were. You know who they were? Krishna and Balaram. And Arjunacharya remembered that he had scratched this shloka, and the scratching of the shloka was these marks on their backs. Right? And he said, my God, Krishna has come to prove that anyone who is exclusively dependent on him, he shall personally carry for him whatever he needs in his life. Whether it's money, whether it's a home, whether it's a car, whether it's food, whether it's peace, whether it's prosperity, Krishna shall personally carry, lug on his back what his devotee needs. But the devotee has to be the kind of Arjunacharya, has to be the kind of Sudama. Sudama knew this well. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. Why should I work? Why should I go around here? I'm in abject poverty, doesn't matter. Let Krishna see. If he wants to send, he'll send. If he doesn't want, bam bam bole, no problem. We will have a good time, no problem. Fast, Krishna's purifying us, giving us an opportunity for a detox program. You know, no problem. If nothing comes, no problem. A full detoxification, system gets cleansed. Not an issue really. Very highly positive attitude. But devotees like Sudama can do that. We are all trying to be like Sudama, come to that stage, but we are not like Sudama. Householders who are not like Sudama cannot artificially say, Krishna will provide it all. And the wife is coming and saying, Aji, office jane ka time hua hai. Go work. It's time to go to work. Say, no, we heard the story of rags to riches in the temple. The journey from poverty to prosperity. We heard the story of how Krishna takes care of his devotees, Sudama, Arjunacharya. Why should we go to office? Just depend on Krishna. Well, devotees like Sudama and Arjunacharya can do that. Other householders cannot. What should other householders do? What should other family men do? They should work hard, considering their work as a sacred act of service to the Supreme Lord. They should work to maintain their families, to maintain their bodies, to maintain their lives. And as they are trying to work to maintain their families and their lives, they should bear two things in their mind. You want to know what are the two things? Every family man, as he works in office, a professional, a businessman, as he works, he should try to do his work as a sacred act of service to the Supreme Lord while bearing two things in his mind. The first thing, that my source of income is not my source of maintenance. Srila Prabhupada writes in a purport to the story of Mrigari in Chaitanya Charitamrita that one's source of income cannot be the source of maintenance. He gives the example of Mrigari. He used to hunt and earn a livelihood. That was his source of income. And Narad Muni said, stop it. You can't do this. He said, but how will I survive? Krishna will take care. And so much came. Source of income is not the source of maintenance. How do we understand that practically? Very simple. We earn so much money. If in one day a burglar comes and steals everything from the house, will that source of income be the source of our maintenance? No. We earn so much wealth, we invest in the stock market, and the Greek bailout happens, the market in America crashes, and we lose all our money. Will all that income still be the source of our maintenance? No. We earn a lot of money, right? And there is a massive health crisis in the family, and all that money is spent on the health crisis, and there's nothing left. Will that income be the source of our maintenance? No. Situations are not in our hands, are they?
The stock market in the world crashing, is it in our hands?
No.
One of the family members or us getting a terminal disease, is it in our hands?
No.
A burglar coming in spite of all security systems and stealing things from our house, is it in our hands? It's in our hands only till the time we have security arrangements made. Beyond that, what can we do?
What a powerful statement Srila Prabhupada made.
The source of one's income cannot be the source of one's maintenance. Krishna is the one who maintains us through our income. If we can get the income, and if Krishna wants, he'll keep it and he'll maintain it. If Krishna wants, it'll go away and we are on the streets. You see, a householder, while he's earning money in service to the Lord, should always remember this principle. It's Krishna who is maintaining. Chiti ko kanbhar deta hai, hati ko manbhar deta hai, wo dayanidhi sabki sudhi leta hai. To the chiti, he's giving kanbhar. To the ant, he's giving this much. To the hathi, he's giving manbhar. To the elephant, he's giving so much. Will he not maintain his devotees? He will. But since we are not like Sudama, we shouldn't artificially try to not do anything. We should work while depending on Krishna for our maintenance and not our income. We'll use our income to maintain ourselves, but we know that if Krishna wants, all what we have got will go away, and then how am I going to maintain myself? You all know, you all agree with what I'm saying? Right. Secondly, when a family man or a householder is working, what should be the second thing in his mind? The second thing in his mind is, Tan man dhan sab kuch hai tera. My mind, my body, my words, Krishna's everything is yours. I would like to offer it all in your service. I'm earning this money. I'll use this money to serve you. I'll try to support the temple in some way. I shall try to see that I'll try to, you know, I'll somehow or the other, in some way, shape or form, serve Radha Gokulananda. Not everything, because I have a family also. A part I'll serve the temple. A part I'll serve the family, because when I serve the family which is devotees, that is also service to Krishna. Service to a family which is all devotees is also service to God. What if the family members are not devotees? If we serve family members who are not devotees, is that a service to God? Yes, it is. Even if they are not devotees of Krishna, to serve them with our income is a service to Krishna. Because by taking good care of them, we inspire them to come closer to Krishna. So a family man is thinking, while he earns this money, I must use what I have. Not just say, Tan man dhan sab kuch hai tera, sab kuch hai tera. O Swami, sab kuch hai tera, tera tujhko arpan, Prabhu ka Prabhu ko arpan, kya lage mera. Om Jay Jagadish Hare. Janmashtami aa raha hai, bhagwan ke liye kuch do. Aise gadba, aise baat kaise bol sakte hain aap? You know, a priest in a church came in front of his congregation. He said, we need 200,000 or rather 2 million pounds to finish the construction of the church. There's a good news and bad news. The good news is, we have all the money to build the church. The bad news is, it's still in all of your pockets. He said. You know. And a lot of time that can really happen. And therefore, the aarti that we sing is, Tan man dhan sab kuch hai mera, sab kuch hai mera, O Prabhu sab kuch hai mera, mera mujhko arpan, Prabhu ka bhi mujhko arpan, kya lage tera, O Prabhu main swami ghar ka. Anyone can say, I'll use what I have in service to Krishna. But when time comes, na, that is when we know whether we really earn for Krishna and service to Krishna, or only we earn for the sake of earning and for the sake of enjoying life. You see, you know, there was a discussion between a 1 pound coin and a 100 pound bill. Do they call a bill or a note here?
Currency note? Note, fine. Okay, that note comes from here in India. But in America, they call it a bill, $100 bill. So 1 pound coin and a 100 pound note, they were having a discussion amongst each other. You know what the 100 pound note told the 1 pound coin? You little stupid round fellow. What do you think about yourself? You know where I've been? I've been to Switzerland. I've been to Europe in the pockets of my masters. I've been to Italy. I've been to New York. I've been to India also. I've been to all these places. And how many people's pockets did I change? Once I was in the pocket of Mr. Simpson. And from Mr. Simpson's pocket, I went to Mr. Thompson's pocket, who was a ice cream seller. You know, I have traveled the world. And what about you, 1 pound coin? You don't go anywhere, don't you? He said, yes. The 1 pound coin said, where I go, you've never been. The temple hundi. The place where I visit, you have never been to that place. The donation box of the temple. It's very easy to say, my dear Lord, I'll give it to you. It's very difficult to pull something out and give. Friends, we must remember, in Kali Yuga, money is the residence for Kali. Kali brings quarrel and Kali brings conflict. Look at lives around us. Sometimes look at our own lives. Why there is so much quarrel? Why there is so much conflict? Why there is so much dissension? Why there is so much dissatisfaction in spite of having so much? Because Kali Yuga resides in hoarded wealth. Right. Not to say that we shouldn't save. Not to say that we shouldn't have for ourselves. But to say that we should purify our wealth. There are too many negative vibrations in that money. Coming from a lot of malpractices and coming from a lot of wrong things that have been done. We have to purify that wealth by using it in service to the Lord and His devotees. When we use it in the service to the Lord and devotees, then whatever we have, that money becomes the cause of our joy. That money becomes the cause of our prosperity. That money becomes the cause of our satisfaction. Otherwise, in hoarded wealth, Kali resides. Srila Prabhupada, one of his followers, was the great grandson of Mr. Henry Ford. Ford Company, cars. His name was Alfred Ford. And Srila Prabhupada had initiated him and had given him the name Ambarish Das. But he had not met Prabhupada so far. For the first time he came to meet Srila Prabhupada, Ambarish Prabhu, he fell at the feet of Prabhupada and started chanting his pranam mantra, respecting Srila Prabhupada. And even before he got up, Srila Prabhupada said, so, in what I understand, you are the great grandson of Henry Ford. Where is Henry Ford now? And Ambarish Prabhu was confused. Where is Henry Ford? I don't know, Swamiji. I don't know Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada, Ambarish Prabhu recalls and says, in one statement he showed me what the value of life is. Such a big thing created. And where is Henry Ford now? Gone. The Ford company is still there, but where is Henry Ford now? Srila Prabhupada immediately put things in perspective. And then Bali Mardhan Prabhu's wife came there and she offered her obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada teased Ambarish Prabhu. Hey, Mr. Ford, here is Mrs. Toyota. Because Bali Mardhan Prabhu's wife was the heiress for the Toyota car company. So two of Srila Prabhupada's disciples were in the line of two of the biggest car companies. One was Mr. Ford's and the other was Mr. Toyota. You can imagine. And both of these big shots, Srila Prabhupada said, have what you have, no problem, but use it in service to Krishna. It will give you true joy, true satisfaction, no quarrel, no dissension, no hypocrisy, but contention and happiness. We are sitting today here at the Bhaktivedanta Manor. And the Bhaktivedanta Manor is a classic example of someone who used things in the service of the Lord. One of the most popular figures of the United Kingdom. Not the United Kingdom.
one of the most popular figures of the entire world. When this gentleman would sing, people would swoon in ecstasy. They would have ambulances waiting, because when this man would come on stage and start singing, men and ladies would fall unconscious. They would have to have stretchers carrying these people to the hospital just by singing. This man was Mr. George Harrison from the Beatles. He was so famous. He had such prosperity and money. He came to Srila Prabhupada and he wanted to join the temple. Srila Prabhupada said, no. You work, you sing, you make albums, and you preach Krishna's message through your songs, and use your money in service to Krishna. And this entire property of, I believe, 85 acres, I was told, if I'm not wrong, right? About 85 acres, most of it was given by George Harrison to Srila Prabhupada, you know. And Shri Radha Gokulananda were installed here by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada when George Harrison gave this property to Srila Prabhupada. And then he got so much more prosperity, that in his final days, he was chanting the names of the Lord, and he left this world to go to the eternal abode of the Lord. A classic example of someone who was a family man, who had a family, a house, children, but learned how to use things in service to Krishna. Of course, we are not saying George Harrison jaise hari bahut jyada bol diya ki abhi hum apna ghar de de pura ka pura. Nahin baba, George Harrison ke paas bahut ghar tha. To ek de diya. Apne paas ek ghar hai na, to usme se thoda kuch de sakte hain bhagwan ki seva mein. According to our capacity, or like someone pronounces, according to our capacity, you know, according to our capacity, whatever we can use in service to Krishna. So, are you getting the point that we can't depend on Krishna artificially like Sudama and Arjunacharya did? Are we getting the point that one who is a householder must work in service to Krishna and earn material and spiritual wealth? And as he is earning material wealth, he must have two things in mind. You remember what are the two things? One, our source of income is not our source of maintenance. And two, we are not just going to say I'll use in service to Krishna, but I'll actually use things in service to Krishna. You all with me? That's a very feeble yes. I love to hear a loud yes, you know. Yes. Meanwhile, as I drink some water. So now we know the qualification of Sudama, and we know the condition of Sudama. The third is the conversation of Sudama. The conversation between Sudama and his wife. Sudama's wife comes to Sudama and says, go to your friend and ask him for some wealth. She says, who is my friend? My friends are all poor like me only. You know, I mean, wealthy people hang out with wealthy people, poor people hang out with poor people, beggars hang out with beggars, drunkards hang out with drunkards, and cooks hang out with cooks, and singers hang out with singers. You're asking me to go and ask wealth from whom? My friend? Who's my friend? Oh, people whom I hang out with is all poor people. They have nothing. You know, what will they give? What will a poor man give? He has nothing to give. For him, it's hard to make the ends meet for the day. How many of you been to Mumbai? India? Bombay? If you've been to Bombay, at least you've heard of Bombay. And if you've been to Bombay, you probably have heard of the local trains in Bombay. Oh my God. Hell is better. Hell is indeed better. Whew, horrible. And there's a place called Dadar in Bombay. And there's a big bridge, Dadar Bridge. Thousands of people just walk by that bridge daily. You know, a beggar, elderly beggar was sitting there. And another beggar came and said, hey, I heard that you have arranged your daughter's marriage. To the beggar is saying, yeah, I have arranged my daughter's marriage. To whom? Hey, the beggar who sits on the Parel Bridge. The other bridge. Said, I've also heard that you're giving a big dowry to your daughter. Said, yeah, big dowry I'm giving to my daughter and my son-in-law. So what is the dowry that you're giving? And I'm giving him the entire Dadar Bridge. Wherever he wants to sit, he can sit. Change his location. Full bridge. free location. He can choose whichever is good spot to beg. What can a poor man give others? He can give a good spot to beg. Sudama said, I hang out with poor people. What am I going to gain from? What will I go to? I don't have any friend like that. She said, not those poor people in Porbandar, Baba. I'm talking of your friend in Dwarka. Sudama said, which friend in Dwarka? What is his name? She said, his name is Shri Pati. Pati, husband. Shri Lakshmi. His very name is Shri Pati. The husband of the goddess of fortune. The husband of Lakshmi. Are duniya Lakshmi ki piche bhagti hai. Lakshmi maiya, de de rupaiya. Paar kar naiya. You know. All the time running after Lakshmi. And your friend is the husband of Lakshmi, Baba. If we were to ask some pumpers here and there, that's fine. You're supposed to be going to your friend who's the husband of Lakshmi. Go to him. Go to him. Ask from him. Approach him. You don't want to be a success story, my dear husband. Don't we love to hear success stories? Stories from rags to riches. From poverty to prosperity. From being a roadpati to karodpati. Isn't it? Want to hear success stories. You don't want to be a success story? If you want to be a success story, go to Shri Pati who is in Dwarka. Go and approach him. He will give you what you are asking for. Go, Sudama. My dear husband, go. You know. Of course, Krishna is Shri Pati, the husband of the goddess of fortune. And what he can bless us with is incredible. In Vrindavan, when Krishna was a little baby boy, very sweet, very charming, a fruit seller came selling fruits. And in those days, they had the barter system. People would bring a handful of grains and offer it and then take some fruits or things in exchange. Krishna saw that everyone was bringing a handful of grains. So he went into the storage area and brought a handful of grains. His tiny little hands holding just a couple of grains. And as he was reaching back towards the fruit seller, what he was holding, half of that fell off. He came and he said, Krishna wants to eat your fruits. Okay. Gave this little grains to this lady. And this lady saw the tiny hands of Krishna pulling the lady. And she filled the hands of Krishna with as many fruits that could come in the hands of Krishna. Take it. As many. She filled it. And Krishna smiled. A charming smile. And then the lady was so captivated by the beauty that while looking at the beautiful, charming face of Krishna, she was trying to pick up her fruit basket. And what did she see? She saw that her entire fruit was so heavy. Why is it so heavy? She looked into the basket and the basket was filled with gems and rubies and pearls and emeralds and lapis lazulis and sapphires. Oh my God. Heavy. Just couldn't pick it up. She was stunned to see the incredible amount of wealth that Krishna put in her basket. I'm sure we are all looking forward to tomorrow, seeing where baskets are available in the market. I'm sure we are looking forward to carrying those baskets on our heads and coming to Radha Gokulananda temple. And saying, Krishna, she only gave you two. I gave you the whole basket. Fill my basket also. It is explained that Krishna filled her basket with material wealth. More than that, Krishna filled the basket of her heart with spiritual wealth. Bhakti. There is no greater treasure in this world than the treasure of love. There is no greater treasure in this world than the treasure of loving relationships. There is no greater treasure in this world than care. Krishna placed in the heart of this Pulinda lady the greatest of all jewels, the jewel of bhakti. And therefore, whether or not the material wealth comes, if the wealth of bhakti comes, other things are all small and they fall in perspective eventually. You know, Sudama's wife said, Shripati,
Go, ask from him. Prabhupada was once being driven by one of his disciples. And this disciple was talking to Prabhupada about different kinds of treatment. He said, Prabhupada, this allopathy doesn't work. I think naturopathy will work with you, Prabhupada. You should take naturopathy treatment. And as they were discussing, the car brakes failed and they were on a cliff. Prabhupada said, so now, will your naturopathy, allopathy, homeopathy come to your help? Naturopathy, homeopathy, allopathy doesn't come. Tirupathy, Shripathy, Radhikapathy, they come to help in a situation of dire need. Not to say that we shouldn't work, but to say that we have to depend on their mercy for whatever we get in our lives. He's Shripathy. Go there and get something from him. You can ask something from him. I'll tell you a nice story about Tirupathy Balaji. Tirupathy, since we are talking about Shripathy, Tirupathy. Did you know that the Janmashtami dress of Tirupathy Balaji costs 8 crore Indian rupees, which is I don't know how many million pounds. Any businessman can help me with that. What is that in pounds? You know, 8 crore Indian rupees. Prosperous, huh? Shripathy, na? What is the problem to give that to Shripathy? People will raise a hue and cry. Hey, what is this? How can you give so much to the Lord? How so much money can be given to the Lord? Why such an expensive crown? Why such expensive cloth? And 2 years back when I was in England, I read a news that a jewelry designer had made a tiara. You know what a tiara is? A tiara is a small little crown. It's a very elegant, aristocratic, rich people wear. Someone like the queen, really. A tiara. He had designed a tiara worth 75 crore Indian rupees. I don't know what that is in pounds again. Because then I had changed it according to the exchange rate. Today, I don't know what it means. 75 crore Indian rupees. Do you know for whom? For his dog. I am not joking. I have that news article and the photograph on my computer. On my laptop. 75 crores Indian rupees on a tiara which he put on his dog. And the dog doesn't even know what is on the head. Tiara is okay. You put a dog chain is okay. You put this cup on his head as a crown, it's okay. What does he understand? Huh? Doesn't matter. And when we spend only 7 crores, not 70 crores, for Balaji, such a hue and cry. How can you spend so much money on a stone? How can you spend so much money on religion? How can you spend so much money on God? But no one questioned, how can you spend so much money on a dog? Nothing offensive about dog. You know? Dogs are loved and dogs can be loved and all that, fine. But 75 crore Indian rupees, that's a lot of money, isn't it? Balaji, they have a hundi, a donation box. Naturally, spontaneously, people will come there and they don't even think of putting something in. They'll pull out their gold chain, their gold bangles, their diamond earrings and just put it. Take it. Shripathy, for you. Make sure you give more in return. You know, good investment scheme. Going to Shripathy is a good investment scheme. Give and expect more easily. Thoda do, bahut lo. You know, you see. People put spontaneously. And below there is a bank. There are closed circuit cameras there. So many valuables come. People, they count the cash, take the gold, the jewel, separate it all, diamonds. And they're always concerned that no one should steal from here. Once, a man working there, somehow managed to steal a gold ring studded with a diamond which seemed to be so exquisite, so rare and so expensive. He took that ring, immediately left the place because if caught, gone. Close from Tirupathy is Chennai, Madras. He went down south to Chennai to try and see if he can find someone who could buy this diamond ring. He went from shop to shop, jeweler to jeweler, and they said, sorry, this kind of diamond is the most expensive. We can't pay for it. And if we take it, no, there's no buyer. And if someone catches us, sorry, it belongs to someone. We can't take it. Finally, he went around. No one purchased it. He came to Mumbai. When he came to Mumbai, he came to the shop of one of the biggest jeweler of Mumbai called TBZ, Tribhuvan Das Zaveri. When he came to the shop, The man who was at the counter, he showed this ring. Like to sell this ring. I said, fine. Can you pay for it? Yes, we can pay for it. Kept it. Sit. And he went and told the boss something. And just in a couple of minutes, the police came. And caught this man red-handed, straight. To put him behind bars. Because it was Tribhuvan Das Zaveri who had gone to Tirupati and put his own diamond ring in the hundi, right, for Tirupati Balaji. The most expensive diamond of the world, practically speaking. Given it to Tirupati Balaji. So you can't cheat Shripati, can't cheat Tirupati. But Sudama's wife said, you go to your friend who is Shripati. Sudama said, friend? How can I call the Lord my friend? He's not my friend. He's my master. I can't go to him asking for some things. He said, okay, you're not his friend now, Baba. Theek hai. Don't call him your friend. But go there because you're a Brahmana. You're a Brahmana, Baba. And what is Lord Krishna? Go Brahmana Hitaya cha. He loves cows and he loves Brahmanas. Because he loves Brahmanas, as soon as you go there, Brahman Dakshina, he will give you something, Baba. He wants to serve you because he respects and loves Brahmanas and cows. Go there. Why does Krishna love Brahmanas? What's so special about Brahmanas they love, that he loves them? You know? Well, Krishna loves Brahmanas because Brahmanas are those people who teach people in society what is right. Who teach people devotion unto Krishna. Who teach people how not to do wrong. And they not only teach people, but they also live by those teachings. If one of the people in society, one of your friends, teaches your son what is right, teaches your son to come on the right path, wouldn't you like that person? You would. When Krishna sees a Brahmana teaching all of us his sons what is the right thing to do, and sees that he also lives by it, oh, how pleased Krishna is with the Brahmana. Of course, Krishna is not pleased with the Brahmanas that we know today. Not Brahmanas who say that we are Brahmanas by birth. You know, hum to Brahman hai, bahut bade Brahman, janmajat Brahman. Aha, kitne bade Brahman hai, kitne logon ko aapne sahi rasta dikhaya, bataiye. Khud raste pe chal rahe hai kya sahi raste pe? Big question. Such Brahmanas Krishna doesn't like. Krishna loves selfless Brahmanas. Were simply willing to serve him, serve humanity by teaching them what is the right thing. Go, my dear husband. He's go Brahmana Hitaya cha. He loves Brahmanas. He'll bless you with all what is needed for us in our lives. He said, Brahmana, I am a Ponga Pandit. You know, in India they have this saying called Ponga Pandit. Pandit means very learned, you know. And Ponga Pandit, Ponga means a hollow crisp. Have any of you eaten hula hoops? If any of you have eaten hula hoops, you'll understand what a Ponga Pandit means. Huh? Hula hoop, that ring, is something that you can put on your finger, isn't it? Potato crisp. And kids love to put that hula hoop as rings and eat it from the finger. Now, Ponga in India is a larger hula hoop which fits your whole finger. Yellow in color, you know, fits your finger like this, full. And kids would put their fingers in this ponga and eat it. Why it's called ponga, you know, because it's hollow. Ponga means hollow, hollow from inside. So Pandit means one who is full. Ponga Pandit means outside Pandit, inside hollow. Nothing there. Sudama said, you're calling me Pandit, you're calling me Brahmana. I'm Ponga Pandit. I don't have any Brahminical qualifications. I don't think I can go to Dwarka. He was giving all reasons why he shouldn't go. Many times husbands do that. You know, said, I don't want to go. Sudama's wife said, all right, don't worry. You're saying you're not a Brahmana, na? You said you're not a friend, fine. Okay, agreed. You said you're not a Brahmana, fine. Agreed. But my dear husband, you're a great devotee of Lord Krishna. You spent time with him in the ashram of your guru, Sandipani Muni, in Ujjain, Avantipur. He's your friend. You are his devotee. Forget friendship, but you are his devotee. I have seen how much you love him. Go. Krishna always wants to give so much to his devotees. If not to a friend, if not to a Brahmana, at least to his devotees.
He's willing to give his life for his devotees. Go, my dear husband, ask from him. Because you are a devotee, he will never deny you. Sudama, he said, devotee? That's too big a word. I am not a devotee. How can I go to Krishna? You're calling me a devotee? I'm not a devotee of the Lord. A true devotee never says, I am a devotee. And someone who's not a devotee will say, Bhagavan ka bhagat hai hum. Big devotee, you know. Dunya samajhte nahi abhi tak kya hai main. The world is not understanding my greatness. How great a devotee I am. They don't understand me. They don't have the vision to see my greatness. One who is a devotee will never show off that he is a devotee. Will never say that he is a devotee. Will never say that he has any bhakti. Someone who is very shallow in his understanding of devotional service, he will say, I am a devotee. See, I have so much bhakti. See, I have so much love for Krishna. One of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, His Holiness Hridayananda Maharaj, he wrote a poem. In his poem, he wrote, oh dear Krishna, here am I, your devotee, crying for you. Srila Prabhupada read this poem and Prabhupada said, no, correct this word. Right? Here I am your servant, Krishna, crying for you. Don't say I am your devotee. Devotee is a very big thing. None of our acharyas say that they are devotees. But we can say that we are Krishna's servants. Shrimati Radharani is Krishna's devotee. You know, Sudama is Krishna's devotee. Arjuna is Krishna's devotee. Madhumangal is Krishna's devotee. Yashoda is Krishna's devotee. Nanda is Krishna's devotee. Vasudeva Devaki are Krishna's devotee. Who are we? Krishna's servants. In fact, the servants of the servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna's servants. We dare say that we are Krishna's servants. It's a big thing to even say that I'm Krishna's servants. It's a privilege to say I'm simply a servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna's devotees. And if I just serve these devotees, probably Krishna will look at me one day. So Dama said, I am not a devotee, Baba. Don't say I am a devotee. That's what every devotee says. And then finally she said, okay, you're not a devotee. Don't worry. Even if you're not a devotee, still go. You're not his friend, fine. You're not a Brahmana, fine. You're not a devotee, fine. You're not a surrendered soul, fine. You still go. Because even if Krishna doesn't look at you and give you anything, na, Krishna's devotees, the Yadavas, the Vrishnis, the Andhakas who are all living in Dwarka, they will look at you. They will give you something. Oh, what a powerful lesson. Even if Krishna doesn't look at us, fine. Krishna will not look at us. We want Krishna's devotees to look at us. He said, you go. Krishna's devotees will glance on you and they will give you, they will bless you with prosperity. Krishna and Arjuna once were in Hastinapur and they were going for a stroll on the banks of the river Yamuna. I told the story at Vijay Bhai's house in his Sangha program. And as they were walking on the banks of the river Yamuna, they entered a massive palace in Indraprastha that Arjuna and the Pandavas had created. Lying down on soft beds covered with sheets like the white foam of the ocean waters, they talked. They shared pleasantries and wonderful exchanges. They were served with exquisite preparations from the best cuisines of the world. Then, after all of that, they once again came out to go around in the forest called the Khandava Prastha. As they sat there, talking with each other, on a bench, beautiful bench made of ivory, as they were discussing their exploits, the battles, the struggles that they had gone through. Suddenly a Brahmana, shining like the sun, came and said, hey, I want food, please give me something to eat. Said, what do you want? I want to eat this forest because I am Agni. I have gone to a fire sacrifice there, they fed so much ghee to me, I have indigestion. And Brahma told me that the herbs for your indigestion are in this forest. But every time I try to burn it and eat it, Indra showers rains because his friend Takshaka lives here. What should I do? Please help me. And then the whole story continues. Krishna and Arjuna help him. And the whole forest is burned down for 15 days. All the Rakshasas who are living there are destroyed. They come out. And finally, as everything has been burned, there's one Asura, one demon called Maya. Maya Danav rushes out of the forest. And as he's rushing, Krishna holds the Sudarshan Chakra and is about to hurl it. And he comes and falls at the feet of Arjun and says, Arjun, please help me, save me. Arjun says, he's fallen at my feet. I have to save and help him. Right. Krishna, please spare him. Krishna spares Mayadhanav. And then he says, what can I do for you? Arjun said, I have saved you. I can't take anything from you. Krishna, what can I do? He said, build a wonderful assembly for the Pandavas. That's when he builds this wonderful assembly with all these mystical effects. That's where Duryodhan falls in the beginning of the Mahabharata. You know, principle is, even if we are demoniac, good, bad, doesn't matter. We fall at the feet of devotees, especially pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada. Krishna will definitely look at us and say, I give him shelter. And therefore, the wife of Sudama said to him, go to Dwarka, you're not a friend of Krishna fine, you're not a Brahmana fine, you're not a devotee fine, fall at the feet of the Yadus, fall at the feet of the Vrishnis and the Andhakas, they will give you something. In this way, Sudama's and his wife's conversation takes place. And this evening we have discussed these two sections of the story. First, this morning we discussed qualifications of Sudama. This evening we discussed the second thing, condition of Sudama and his wife in terms of their situation in their life. And thirdly, we discuss the conversation between Sudama and his wife. Tomorrow morning, we will discuss the contemplation of Sudama, the commutation of Sudama, the reception of Sudama, the recollection of Sudama, and the reciprocation of Sudama. So if any of you are interested to see how the story progresses from rags to riches, please be here tomorrow morning at 7:30 when we'll be continuing the final part of this lecture series, which is entitled From Rags to Riches. I wish to thank all of you very much for your enthusiastic and keen hearing of this wonderful pastime from the Srimad Bhagavatam this evening. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavat Mahapuran ki Shri La Prabhupada ki Jai. Hare Krishna.